Time now to get your Future Tuesday on AM 1080 KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Hey, Mrs. Future.
Hi, honey.
Happy cloudy Tuesday.
It's actually gotten pretty sunny. It's back and forth,
back and forth.
Yeah, like everything, it's in process of deciding. Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cool? Is it going to be
a fun day?
Gloomy, or is it going to be bright?
Gloomy, but fun. That's where I like to see it.
Oh, really?
Well, cloudy days.
You want it to be gloomy?
Well, cloudy days are a good time to, you know, be internal and think about things or watch movies.
Oh, that's true. Right? That's true. Yeah. It's a good excuse to stay inside, but we've had a few too many of those lately.
Well, it's a matter of opinion. To take it even further, our second hour, we have a very special guest coming on, a film director in Hollywood, Brett Leonard.
Our old friend.
Cut his teeth here in Santa Cruz back in the 80s.
That's right. Killer Clowns from
Outer Space.
Outer Space.
Yes. Well, he didn't make that movie. He was on this. His first movie here was called The Dead Pit, which is a horror film, followed by a very successful film, The Lawnmower Man, the first film about virtual reality. Uh-huh. And Brett and I were friends back here in the 80s, and I was a young journalist investigating all these things in Silicon Valley and bringing the data over here, and Brett was turning it into movies.
Right.
You know, one of the...
The beginning of the digital revolution that transformed Hollywood.
That's right, starting here in Santa Cruz.
That's right.
Brett has been in Hollywood for 30 years now and has a pretty good feel for how this is affecting the entertainment industry.
Yes.
How the whole entertainment industry is changing.
An inside scoop, as it were.
He was on a panel at Digital Hollywood last week, online.
Right, the first time held online.
Digital Hollywood.
That was a very interesting panel. Yeah.
So, yeah, Brett's always been a futurist in Hollywood and directing, and he's got some new ideas for cinema of the future. As even if we have to get used to the virus, what would be the maximum fun we could have with the technology at that point? So that's in the second hour.
Right.
And in this hour, I've got a couple of stories that have absolutely nothing to do with the virus.
Yeah, I think like everybody, we're all ready to loosen up, move on, people be smart for their own safety, be practical now that we've educated ourselves how to be safe.
Oh, yeah. And we have lots of stories on the virus, too. It's not like it's only no non-story. It's a combination because there are exciting breakthroughs happening with COVID as well.
Sure.
Like the Moderna stuff.
Yes,
which will bring
very interesting.
Bobby on to talk about that.
Okay, fantastic.
All right, and the non-stories, let's start off. SpaceX launched a top-secret Space Force mission.
Oh, wow.
A few days ago.
Mm-hmm. Top secret? How did you find out?
Well, some of it is known. Some of it is known by citizen scientists and curiosity seekers.
Mm-hmm.
And
you really can't hide a launch that much, right? It's
no,
a very big, bright thing.
And so Pentagon doesn't say nothing. I mean, they tell you a few things about it. They tell you that it's got the X-37B on board.
What does that tell you?
Well, the X-37B is a special space plane made by Boeing that looks like the space shuttle, only like a third of the size.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's totally robotic.
Uh-huh.
And you put it in the payload of a Falcon 9 rocket and send it up. And because it doesn't have humans on it, it can stay up for 2 or 3 years at a stretch. And
I see.
The Air Force has been doing long missions with it.
I see.
So since they've had it, they've had 3 or 4 long missions.
Hmm.
They're about to launch another one. And what's interesting about this mission, what we know, what we've gleaned so far, are two things. One is that they're sending up a bunch of seeds, plants.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to do, the Air Force is, the Space Force is doing experiments.
See what they can grow in space, huh?
Okay. Apparently, something's going on with that. Seems to be important.
Uh-huh.
You know,
good.
I imagine that you'd want to grow your own food in space.
Sure.
For starters.
And you'd want to know what happens to seeds when they're not protected by the atmosphere.
Yeah, I applaud that. I think that's interesting to learn about that. The other thing is a power beam experiment.
Oh. A power beam, like power a ray beams, gun? Yeah.
No, no, it's a way of sending power over a distance. It was like one of the original stories of Nikola Tesla. Uh-huh. You know, not only was he going to generate power to be used by devices like light bulbs and radios, but you would transmit the power wirelessly.
So we're talking about wireless electricity.
Wireless power, yeah.
Wireless power. You know, the sun is shining and it's putting out all kinds of electromagnetic rays, and power would just be a subset of that frequency range, right? In the electromagnetic range.
Yeah, the idea is you're not just picking it up, you're sending it.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like transmission of radio waves is a way of sending power in a very low level.
Right.
This is like electricity, sending electricity.
Uh-huh.
And so they're using lasers and microwaves to experiment with the, taking solar energy, which is up there 24/7, and turning solar energy into either a microwavable or a laser transmissible power, electricity, that will be used to power various projects.
Hmm.
Like one of the projects of the Air Force, Space Force combo here, is high-flying drones that are constantly doing their thing around the Earth.
I see. So wait a minute. Let me get this picture here.
Drones with good cameras
on them. So we're sending up in satellites, we're sending some platforms that can harvest solar power above the atmosphere.
And power
and then a fleet turn that into either a laser beam or a microwave beam that...
And power devices, like
that
drones.
That charges up drones that are up there.
That's one of the uses for power. There are many uses for power, as you know. You can't say that is power. But yeah, one of the problems with doing such in the past has been power. Batteries only last 30 minutes, even a few hours with liquid fuels. So they have to take them down and make them go up again. Wouldn't it be nice if we could just have a fleet of drones around the planet at a very high altitude, or even not so high, you know, the regular ones we're using now, without ever having to refuel?
Recharging stations.
Yeah, free energy from space, why not, you know?
The sun is putting out more energy than we can possibly use, so we may as well try and figure out how to use it, right?
Right. So the Space Force, Air Force folks are trying to figure that out.
Sure. Take advantage of the abundance.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Power beam experiments. So I thought I'd mention that. Nothing to do with the virus.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Also, on the solar front, we may be entering what's called a deep solar minimum right now.
A deep solar minimum. Oh, well, let's ponder that while we go to a break. What do you say? All right, folks. You're listening to Dr. Future and Mrs. Future here on KSEO. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Actually, this might have a COVID connection now that I think more deeply about it.
The solar minimum?
Yeah, the solar minimum. As you probably know, the sun has an 11-year cycle, sunspots.
Yes, right.
Ham radio operators know this really well because when you have a high amount of solar activity with lots of sunspots, you have this phenomenon in the atmosphere called skipping, where you're meager home signal can be sent around the world and be picked up in other countries that you never heard of.
No kidding. So in solar maximum, ham radio operators have a greater range.
Skipping. It's a very popular hobby because you never know. It's like fishing in a way. You're running into other people that could be in Luxembourg or Madagascar or some remote ham shack.
Very interesting.
Somewhere.
When's the last time you played with a ham radio?
Oh, probably college, really. Maybe a little bit after the hacker conference.
Uh-huh. I see. Yeah. So you don't know if that ham network is still out there or not.
Well, no, it's more the mentality, right? I mean, at the time it was a big deal because long distance phone calls was very expensive, even domestically. So.
Right.
So the whole idea that you could talk to somebody in Zambezi was just unbelievable. What a treat. But, of course, ham operators were geeks, so they didn't have a lot to say to each other. They mostly told each other what equipment they had and where they were located, and a mailing address so you could get a special postcard from them. And then you'd collect all these postcards and put them on your wall to show you what a good ham. And there's Bobby on the line. All right. Yeah, they were trying to figure out how to get Opal 2 working. It had been switched to another studio, so they had to get it back.
It's true. It's beyond rocket science to have the right signal coming out the board here.
So, Bobby.
Welcome, Bobby.
Yeah, welcome. Yes. Bobby's our science correspondent in San Francisco.
Yeah. Thanks. I love being on this show. It's great. You know what I wanted to talk about, which was outside the virus, was your link that talks about NASA discovering a parallel universe that's running backwards in time.
Yes, that was fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. I wanted to share a little story I had. When I was at Berkeley, I took a class that was called the Tao of Physics.
Yeah.
And Fritjof Capra, this is 1977, Fritjof Capra had just come out with his book, The Tao of Physics.
Yeah.
And so he was teaching from the book. And one of the most interesting lectures he said was, he said, most people, he said, a handful of physicists, PhDs at the time, really understood quantum mechanics and how it actually functioned and actually how it worked. But he said, from his experience, the best way to explain particles when they collided in these high-speed accelerators was the only way you could explain how these particles broke apart, you could explain them perfectly if you could just reverse time and go backwards in time, and then the actions of these particles could be explained.
Made me perfect sense.
Yes, it made perfect sense then.
Well, that's what quantum physics is good for. It can tell you exactly what's happened, but it can't really predict the future.
Or maybe he was tapping into the parallel universe.
Oh, yes, where the future already happened.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes.
Hey, maybe, yeah. But my understanding is that NASA has created a very fancy antenna array to pick up particles passing through the universe, like neutrinos. Neutrinos pass right through the Earth. They're quite interesting. But they were looking for slightly heavier particles from this balloon above Antarctica, where there's hardly any human radio receptivity up there. It's very quiet. And so we're able to really hear the universe pretty well out there. And then while listening, they picked up what they call Tau neutrinos, which are heavier than normal neutrinos. And the Earth blocks them. They're heavy enough that the Earth is a shield for them. But when they analyze these Tau neutrinos, where they were coming from, they were coming from the Earth up to them. And as far as astronomers are concerned, Tau neutrinos don't come from the Earth. They come from space. And that's why they're up in Antarctica, to pick up such heavy neutrinos, because it's quiet. And they found they were coming up from the Earth, which one of the theories is that since they can't pass through the Earth, at least in our understanding of Tau neutrinos, they must be going backward in time. Because how else would you explain them coming from the Earth unless they'd already passed us, and then they're actually coming back in this direction?
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
It's the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. Parallel universes is the stuff we grew up with, right?
Yeah.
In the 60s. That was the diet of sci-fi. Of course there are parallel universes. I think there are even Star Trek episodes that explored that idea. But to actually find that to be true, my goodness. What could this mean?
Well, maybe there is something at the center of our Earth here. We don't know.
So you think the Earth might still be suspect, that there's something in the Earth that would generate these heavy particles.
Where is the center of the universe? It could be in your heart. It could be in the center of the Earth. It could be anywhere.
I tend to be nowhere and everywhere about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very interesting.
Yes. Yes. I think so. I think it seems like, once again, as we're supposedly locking ourselves down, at the same time we're expanding into our understanding of who we are in relation to the universe and what the universe is, you know. So it's pretty exciting in that respect.
Yeah.
So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was all this hubbub in the news lately about a company called Moderna.
Yes.
And their new miraculous treatment for COVID. And my understanding is it's a whole new approach to what they call a vaccine. I mean, it redefines what even a vaccine is.
It's a vaccine that's made without using the virus. Some of the proteins that would substitute for the antigen to generate the antibodies.
That's your understanding.
Right. So it's a new process. Mm-hmm. It's called mRNA, which means messenger RNA, and that happens inside the cell to actually reproduce and replicate the virus or to produce proteins in your normal cells. That's normally happens. So what they've done is they skipped a couple years of development and jumped ahead. And instead of normally years ago, like the polio virus or whatever, it would take years and years because they would have to put this virus, let's say, in an egg and let it grow and multiply and then find out a way to kill the virus or disable part of the virus and then inject that into people and do tests.
And that takes time.
That takes time. Right. So here they kind of skipped all that process that I just mentioned. Moderna had just gone into phase one trials, which means that
they just started, right?
They just started. They did, like Sunit said, they've taken part of the protein. It's these protein spikes, the ACE2 receptor spikes that are on the surface of the virus, and they're using that to inoculate the immune system. So they're just taking pieces of the gotcha. External pieces of this.
You know, the image that's coming to my mind is that if you think of the virus as an octopus and it has one of its tentacles that can tickle the cell and unlock it and open it to let the virus in, they just took that one tentacle and they're tickling the cell with just that tentacle and without the rest of the virus.
Right. So they're teasing your immune system to like start to recognize that protein in particular and produce antibodies.
Without you having to actually have the virus there.
Yeah, without having the virus.
It's the RNA.
But the thing that I wonder is how then does the body know how dangerous the rest of the virus is? If it just responds to this antigen, but the antigen isn't part of something that's more dangerous, maybe the body just says, okay, this isn't a problem.
Yes.
Your body's very intelligent. Your immune system is very intelligent. It's trying to catalog the things that actually cause harm, but can you fool it?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is how normally your body responds with antibodies, and it only looks at the surface. You know, it can't, the macrophages, and it's actually the T cells that they get information from the macrophages and also killer T cells, and they take those surface proteins and they send it off and they hand them off to the B cells, which go in turn mass produce. You know, it's like a factory that creates more of these antibodies and throws those out as the main way that you can recover from this virus.
Yeah, and it uses them as a blueprint for creating a response to the virus if it should occur again in your immune system.
Yes.
So it's giving your immune system the right pieces of information to store about processes.
And it will remember this sometimes, maybe for 6 months, sometimes for the rest of your life.
Right, hopefully you'll figure out a way of making it keep your record for as long as possible, like a lifetime.
Yes.
That you'll never have to worry about this virus again.
But don't you think that would depend on how much danger your body believed it was in from this virus?
Well, I suppose it depends. If it senses it in the real world, it'll know how much of this to pull out of its library to make, you know? So it's like a 3D printer. It'll make stuff as it needs it. You know, your body doesn't have stores of stuff. It just has blueprints that it prints from.
Right, but it probably also has memories about how sick you were or weren't.
There's also yours, and there's the memory of others that had it too. There's a trick there to get it to think that it's your memory, not somebody else's memory. It probably doesn't take it as deeply if it was somebody else's memory, and hence a temporary immunity.
So we got to go to a break.
I'll talk about some of the business elements of it that's happening with this now, because they went up 20% in the last week.
Very curious.
Okay, we'll be right back. We're Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Bobby Wilder with Mrs. Future at the controls. See you in a minute. Okay, welcome back to the show. We're just talking about the Moderna discoveries and how the economic world is responding to it as well.
Yeah, I wonder if they should give it a new name, a new classification, rather than a vaccine. It should be something like
It is biogenetically engineered, so...
Yeah, it's a novel. In fact, there's never been a vaccine ever produced in this fashion.
Right,
it's
that's
a
brand, what I mean.
So it's a whole new process
name.
For making drugs.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's a lot of unknowns. We don't know if it's safe. I just went through phase
one. We don't,
one,
but you know what struck me here was that they had 45 people taking it. And then they divided them into three groups of 15 high, low, and medium dose patients. And the low dose being 25 micrograms.
That's less than the amount of acid that Albert Hoffman took.
25 micrograms. Yeah.
That's 25 mics. Yeah.
Like a disco dose. Anyway, the standard dose was 100 mics back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 25 mics, but still hugely low, way below what a normal drug would normally react at. And at day 43, 2 weeks following their second dose, the levels of binding antibodies in the 25 microgram group, that's the low dose, were at the levels generally seen in the blood samples of people who had recovered from COVID-19. The recovery people had a certain number of these antibodies, and then they had that number with the 25 microgram dose group. Mm-hmm. So very interesting, huh? That means extremely low dosage seemed to work about the same as our immune system.
So microdosing does work.
By actually having COVID-19. So yeah, microdosing is the dose.
Yes, in this case.
For this biogenetically engineered vaccine. What could go wrong?
Yes, exactly.
GMO humans?
So it does sound like they've sped up this process, but even now, I mean, it should take at least a year before we see anything that could be used. There is
a year, really? I thought that everyone's trying to target there's like a fast track race to vaccine this fall.
Yes, there are 121 laboratories trying to produce this vaccine, because whoever comes out with it first obviously is going to
make wins.
Yeah, it's going to make a lot of money.
It's 120 horses in this race.
Well, you know, Bill Gates said that he was $250 million in nine different companies, and he figured eventually, rather than there being nine different solutions, they would isolate it down to one. That was his projection. Mm.
Yeah. I'm not really trying to look forward to getting a vaccine. I'm going to personally try to avoid that if possible and hope that the vaccine would produce herd immunity.
And so you don't have to do it.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like the measles where you find a party and you decide to inoculate yourself at the time and place. Yeah, like chicken pox or whatever. Yeah. You know?
The old-fashioned way. Get the virus in the environment rather than from a shot. Get it through your nose and mouth rather than through a poke in the arm.
Yeah. Or just eat a brownie or something, you know? Because you can take hold in your small intestines, too.
There you go. There's all kinds of ways. Once you know what you're doing, you're trying to communicate with the virus community. Yes. What spaceship do you want to use to get down there?
Well, there are many ways to skin this cat, and virus is just one of them, for sure. Preventative health is another, where you're strong.
I am in the vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin A solution myself.
Yeah. Yes.
Don't give a virus an even break. Keep your immune system strong.
I was surprised. Well, not surprised. I was just, I don't know why it took so long, but I think I sent you the message that PubMed and the National Institutes of Health actually said that there are some advantages to taking vitamin D3 and is very effective in prevention and actually reducing the severity of this COVID-19.
Yeah, which is what the preventative health practitioners have been saying all along.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and you've also had people like John Campbell, who I would say has a genuine conscience for the health and well-being of the world with a traditional allopathic background. He has been a big advocate on his daily blog of vitamin D as having a very important preventative effect. Mm.
And when you watch people, these scientists, you know, like Fauci and other scientists that we hear on the news all the time.
Yeah.
You have to realize that there's incentives for them to actually come out with a virus, and there's incentives for them to come out
with
a
vaccine, right?
Or even remdesivir, right. Or these very expensive protocols.
Right, right. Yeah, there are certain favored ones, certain favored horses, shall we say, in the race.
And make sure that you smear the cheap solutions so that people will be room to buy the expensive ones.
Well, that's hydroxychloroquine.
Hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how that's back in the news again, too.
Right, right. Yeah, it's fascinating the way that one's making the rounds. So
And if you go to the Dr. Future Show links page, the Eastern Virginia Medical School has a protocol out, and you can just download it for free. It's a PDF file. And they actually recommend cheaper ways of prevention or low-cost ways in treatment. And they're recommending hydroxychloroquine.
With zinc, right? That's the...
With zinc, yes.
Right. Well, what the president said he was doing as well. One of the things I gleaned from this you haven't heard on the news much is that the doctor that he's been consulting on that, we said it was north of Westchester County. No, I'm from Westchester County originally.
And really? Where's that?
It's north of New York City, about 25 miles. It's a beautiful part of the country. The doc that I believe Rudy Giuliani was first interviewing about hydroxychloroquine was from that area too. And I bet you that Trump is talking to Rudy's connection with this.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't mention him by name, but he said north of Westchester. And that's, I believe, where the doc was. Mm-hmm. And he apparently has treated hundreds of people with this, and he was an advocate, or he calls it battlefield medicine, because he's thinking on your feet about adjusting doses to the person and to the condition and where they are in the process of the disease and all that. So apparently that's where Trump is getting his info for doing this, and then connected the White House docs with this guy in New York.
I also heard a story that Boris Johnson, when he was sick, they actually sent a team from Gilead Sciences right over to London the next day. And that might have turned him around, or it was the hydroxychloroquine or something. But remember, he was in the intensive care unit, and then he jumps out a couple days later.
Right, right. Yeah, that might be a piece to it, too. Curious, huh? We'll be hearing more about these as it goes on. I'm looking forward to see a big study on hydroxychloroquine with zinc. It seems like that hasn't usually been the protocols in the ones that say it didn't work.
In fact, I think there's only one study with zinc right now, and it won't be done for many, many months. So we won't really know that protocol, a double-blind
study. And to
me,
that's the only one that makes sense then, because that's from what you were saying before about how hydroxychloroquine is a zinc...
Ionophore,
right. Yeah. That you need it to open up the cell wall so that zinc can get into the cell and do its damage to the virus.
Yeah, and zinc is the one that is really doing the work. The hydroxychloroquine is just making the zinc more effective.
Right.
Yes, yes.
And I imagine the danger of dosage is that if you have too much, you would go into a lot of cells that don't have the virus and poison them, or the zinc would destroy some processes in those cells. So,
well, there's a lot of products out there like zinc lozenges that's very good for the flu and the cold and things like that.
Right.
Because it does interfere with replication for viruses, which is great.
And so, probably other things too. Right, yeah. That's the side effects.
Right. I think this is in the early stages, and what we're talking about later is things that would help you in later stages. Those are the things that would keep you from getting thrombosis.
Yeah, once you already have it, this is what you do.
Yes, so all these things we've been talking about are very helpful in the early stages. The vaccine, again, would help you in the early stages also.
Yeah, the best time to take care of your health is before it's compromised.
Yeah.
Still, but if you find yourself later on, then you got to deal with then. So we got a call, Mrs. Future?
We do. Let's say hello to Andre in Capitola. Hello, Andre.
Hey,
how are
Andre.
You?
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Good.
How are we good?
Good.
Driving into Royal Oaks right now, I have a question for your co-host, Bobby.
Yes.
So you called the hydroxychloroquine ionophore, and are there natural or other substances that can be used instead of that drug? I've heard that quinine or quinine is a substance that's found in tonic and short drinks. Is that true? Do you know anything about this, or are there other natural sources of this compound or something that would act like that?
Great question.
That's a great question. Quinine was also used to combat malaria.
Right, was hydroxychloroquine.
And it is a zinc ionophore. And that's where...
Fascinating.
That's
good
where...
Question,
which allows
Andre.
The zinc to
Thank
get
you.
Into
yeah.
the cell.
Yeah.
You're welcome. And, I mean, hopefully it's not too much to it, but it's pretty interesting to me, like, to see if, aside from either the quinine or quinine, any other substance that might act in the same capacity to allow the zinc to go in.
Yeah,
well, there's
idea.
Simple... There's a lot of mushrooms, but actually green tea, like matcha green tea, has zinc ionophores in it. EGCG.
Right?
Yes, green tea. Wow. There's quercetin you can get over the counter.
Quercetin, I've seen that at the health food store.
Yeah, it's a zinc ionophore. And remember a couple weeks ago I mentioned there's hinoki tea oil, which is actually comes from the cedar tree. And it's an aromatic thing that comes from cedar, like when you're in a cedar sauna.
Cedar up.
And all right, everybody's talking
It's a zinc ionophore also.
All right, wow. So there's lots of zinc ionophores
so
available.
So many
Good
home
to know.
Remedies if you want to go this route. Get that zinc into your cells.
Yes.
Andre, really appreciate it. The question, we got to go to a break.
All right.
We'll be back.
Thank you.
Cool.
Have a good one.
Hey, thanks for calling. Okay, welcome back to the show. To juxtapose some of the medical data with some political data on this topic, I've been getting a lot of notices lately on Bill H.R. 6666, which sounds kind of evil. It's Big Brother Bill, and a lot of our community is warning against this. It's kind of a medical takeover of more of our rights under the auspices of contact tracing.
Oh, yes.
Coronavirus testing and reporting agents.
And this is a federal motion as opposed to the one that our governor has already announced is happening, where the state is hiring tens of thousands of people to do contact tracing on the advice of the medical establishment.
And what people are afraid of is that this will result in a new way of enforcing social distancing.
Which is being guided by a federal mandate as opposed to a local or a state mandate.
And administering tests in homes with your consent or not, apparently, and grant the right to take people who test positives from their homes. That's the fear.
I think all of these things really represent a serious challenge to the Constitution.
Yeah.
And it's very right to be aware that there are 45 of our national representatives who are advocating that we violate the Constitution and install a health aristocracy who can make edicts to tell us what we can and can't do with our personal safety.
The full name of the bill is H.R. 6666, and the COVID-19 Testing, Reaching, and Contacting Everyone Act, or TRACE Act. Testing, Reaching, and Contacting Everyone Act.
Yeah. Yeah, if there wasn't already this confusion about who needs to be traced, some people think everyone needs to be traced and that everyone needs to be treated as if they're already sick, whether they are or not, and that this is somehow it within the law. But in fact, the way that you approach a health crisis is you start with the people who are sick and you go out from there and you work to protect the people who are vulnerable, but you don't assume that 100% of the population is sick or vulnerable. And so you don't legislate the majority of people who will have zero or no vulnerability.
To play devil's advocate for a minute, do you think viruses and bacteria respect your human rights?
That's not a question for bacteria. They're not here for my human rights, but laws need to be constructed to respect my human rights because laws are agreements between people.
Yeah.
Okay. The agreement I have with the virus is that I will maintain my health and I will do my best to protect myself from the virus being the cause of my sickness. And that is my agreement with the virus. My agreement with people is that I will be respectful of their right to be safe, but I will choose my own behavior to keep myself safe. And so I will choose, I will voluntarily embrace during a time of unknown sickness, I will willingly wear a mask to help people feel safer. But I don't want laws telling me that 2 months later, when there are no more cases of the virus, that I still need to be acting as if everyone's infected and everyone's not safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you start getting the government involved, common sense goes away.
Well, okay. Well, there are biological metaphors that can be applied to government here that I think might be more appropriate.
Do tell.
Well, in other words, in order to fight something on a biological level, you have to think like on a biological level yourself. So government starts to take some of the, what we would consider freedoms, which are access to things to control something that might be dangerous to you.
Mm-hmm.
And going into your homes is part of that, right? Even though it's an invasion on a human rights level, I would say that for me, it would have to be a pretty extreme condition to go into your homes.
At
but there's
what
a point where
does
it does happen.
A person give up their own consent to be helped
when
by
somebody
someone.
Who's sick in the house causes everyone else to get sick as well and possibly die. Maybe, you know, and in an extreme schedule, if they did die, you for sure would do it. Right? If you knew that somebody was sick in your house, was going to kill everybody else in your house, you would need help to deal with the situation.
Well, the way that you would do
that's
that
extreme, I know,
would
but
be in a caring way for that person. So you would start by doing your best to take care of that person.
Sure.
And then you would take care of everyone in the household by making them safe.
But what if your house is somewhat doesn't have anybody that knows anything about health in that? You know, there are your other interest. That's why you'd have professionals that connected with the government to help you with that.
Okay, you could bring in the professionals to help you, but that's your choice. That's your right to invite them into your home where you have protection for based on your own consent. And if you invite them in, then I would assume you would continue to have the right to consent to the help that they advise.
Up to a point.
You want to have consent.
Up to a point. Yeah, go ahead. We got a caller.
We do. Let's say hello to Dawn and Salinas, who wants to talk about criminalizing sickness.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, really, that's what the government is doing now. You just watch. Nobody's going to get a corona test. No, because if you have corona, you're a criminal. They're going to seize you, seize your cell phone, seize your computer, look at everybody you've been in contact with, and turn you virtually upside down and shake you and see what comes out. And
well,
then
certainly that's the fear.
They'll do the same thing too.
This has been called the architecture of oppression.
Well, certainly that's the fear.
Yeah.
That's not a fear. It's a fact. Why do you think Apple and all them are coming out with these tracing apps? Because they're going to trace everywhere you've been and everyone you've been in contact with. I mean, this is sickening.
Well, you're cherry-picking the data there. I mean, Apple was also just put down by the FBI for not giving access to their machines to the FBI. So there are many ways to think about the data.
Well, I'm thinking about Apple coming out with an app that lets the government turn me upside down.
Well, the Google Apple app's supposed to anonymize the data. The Google Apple apps are supposed to anonymize the data so that it doesn't.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're going to anonymize. Are you crazy? They're not going to anonymize anything.
I know you have a healthy distrust for the government, I can tell. And that's, you know, that's part of being an American.
I don't have any. No, yeah. I'm not. Distrust of the government is a natural thing.
Sure it is. Yeah, it is, especially in America.
I mean, especially when it's involving your constitutional rights.
You're right.
Privacy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's sacred.
And nobody in their right mind would think that corona rises to the state of taking away your constitutional rights. But that's what the government's telling us.
Well, it's starting to.
Why is it, you know, Google and Apple, they don't want to help the government do something to track Al-Qaeda's or anything, but boy, they're sure happy to throw us under the bus, aren't they? I mean, this is ridiculous.
But we pay their bills. What do they
mean? Don, I appreciate everything you're saying. We want to go real quick to Daddy Bird. We're getting close to the end of the hour.
Yeah, then we're going to get into this.
Thank you. We'll be back again next hour.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. It's a good conversation.
Yeah, bye-bye. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Daddy Bird, welcome to the show.
Hey, Daddy Bird.
Is this something somehow connected to LSD?
Well, just the micrograms, the micrograms of the 20 bites.
Just the measurement of how much they have to use.
Yeah.
Why do you ask?
You want to try some antibody?
I heard all that giggling and everything about micro dots or micro bits. And then
we were just talking about the 25 micrograms of the amount of the drug that's being tested by Moderna in their new approach to developing a vaccine.
Yeah, and as far as I know, antibodies aren't psychoactive, so. What's interesting is the dosage, though. Micrograms, 25 micrograms, very few substances in the universe have any effect on our biology at that level. Very few.
LSD is only one actual molecule from a living item.
Yeah,
oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen is one other one that would be alive. Yeah, you didn't know that, did you?
No, thank you. You're full of little tits of information.
That's why it's so effective and at the same time dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the deal.
Bobby, you say something?
The 10 million dosages of this hydroxychloroquine, which comes out from Switzerland, is from Sandoz, which you remember is the first.
Hoffman. And
so Sandoz, there is a connection.
The bicycle ride. It's from Sandoz?
Yes, it's from Sandoz.
Most of the LSD cases traditionally started in Santa Cruz area. Years.
Well, certainly the Merry Pranksters lived here after La Honda in the mountains. The first electric Kool-Aid acid test was here in Soquel.
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff that went on down in Newport Beach, too.
Right. Orange Sunshine country.
Okay. Well, we all know everything, but it's a different day now.
Well, no, it's probably all connected. There's a very interesting documentary on Netflix called Have a Good Trip.
Documentary.
And it's all about LSD and people coming and talking about their experiences on it. It was just published on Netflix. It's got a lot of celebrities in there, too.
I don't mean to be snide, but did they tell anything about going to the state hospital?
Yeah, they have a whole section on bad trips. Yeah, seriously. Okay. You know, ones that last a lifetime. You know, stuff like that.
There
seriously bad.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you bet.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, so thanks for listening this hour. The second hour, we're going to focus a little bit differently. We're going to look more at the entertainment industry, something that affects us all every day, and how it's changing and mutating, and perhaps what new forms of media might arise from this.
KSEO, Santa Cruz.